What is that gloomy racket?
That's the Human League.
That is electro nonsense.
They're electro pioneers. They invented music.
Are you aware of the music known as jazz? Are you aware of jazz music, the movement of jazz?
Why do you keep going on about jazz
for? Because it's the most important art form in the 20th century.
No one listens to jazz. I hate jazz.
You hate jazz?
Yeah.
You fear jazz. Huh?
Shut your mouth.
Yeah, you fear jazz, don't you?
No, I don't.
You fear the lack of rules.
No.
The lack of boundaries. Oh, what's happening? The shapes, the chaos. Huh? Deep-up. Scoop-up.
Don't start scatting.
Beep-up.
We don't need scat at this point.
Beep-dee-dee-bop-bow.
You better stop scatting.
Scoot-up-a-doo-bop-a-dee-ca.
TBTL.
You have no reflexes, your blood tastes like root beer, and some of your bones appear to have vanished.
This banner has letters on it. They spell Bon and Voy.
You see, first we get your attention with the boring stuff, then we hit you with the excitement. Bam!
Do you have any idea who I am? I'm a verified Yelp complainer.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everyone to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
We are living in the midst of a podcast boom.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
That's a tuna, bro!
Coming to you from beautiful Yahats, Oregon, right here on the beach in the Pacific Northwest.
Good God, lemon your breath. When did you find time to eat a diaper that you found on the beach?
I don't know if you all can hear the fresh, salty sea air blowing into this beautiful beach house that my brother-in-law Josh and my sister Sarah rented. Have been nice enough to let me set up shop in here to do the show on a Monday morning. But boy, this is really lovely out here, everyone. And we got a lovely show in store for you. It's episode 3,444 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
You really know what your lane is as a podcast based on the kind of news stories that people associate you with. And over the weekend, something happened that really indicated strongly to me what space we play in as a show. If I had my bell with me, I would ding it right there. And that is apparently the space of people having number two problems, because roughly 30 people sent me the story about this ultimate slip and slide show on NBC being shut down due to an outbreak of explosive diarrhea on the slip and slide. So we've got to give the people what they want. We will be talking about that today on the show. Also, Jeff Bezos is going into space. He auctioned off another spot on his rocket over the weekend for $28 million.
That is illogical, Ensign. Odors cannot travel through the vacuum of space.
And as I often do, I have a weird, subtle beef with this story, with what Jeff Bezos is actually doing. So we will get into that. Also, an 84-year-old former farmer in England has become a very unlikely YouTube ASMR star with his peaceful, comforting voice.
Peace and love, peace and love.
He's got like 9 million views on YouTube. He also doesn't know what YouTube is. So we will get to that, time permitting. We will get to this guy right now. He is the longest running Cobro of the show. Maybe best known for his drawings of the tall ships. I'm just going to shut the sliding glass door for a minute while my brother-in-law backs his very apparently squeaky Toyota 4Runner out of the driveway here in Yahats. And continuing welcoming Andrew Walsh to the show. He is ready on this Monday morning.
Ziggle zagget, let's get back at it.
He's joining me from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington, where there's much less going on, I presume. Good morning, my friend.
Hey, I live a very full life over here. There's a lot going on over here.
Right now. I don't mean like
no, just, I know, I'm
just like
joking.
In your life. I just mean there are fewer people backing up vehicles like 3 feet from where you're doing. I always do this thing where I want there to be like more kind of theater of the mind, more odd, interesting audio, which is why I chose the spot where I'm sitting for a couple reasons. One, it's as close to the router for the Wi-Fi as possible. And two, it is, you know, right at ground level looking out on the beautiful Pacific Ocean here in Yahats. And then I open the door, and then immediately when I start the show, Andrew, I feel mortified because all kinds of people are walking past me right now with their dogs and enjoying the beach, and I look like a maniac.
I feel that, and I didn't want to say this because I didn't want to get in your head, but I can definitely tell that you have the tone. We've been doing this together for a while. You have the tone of a man who doesn't want to be overheard doing his podcast. I know this tone. I know this tone.
Oh, man.
It's okay. You're doing fine. Like, you're doing fine.
I was trying to channel. People might not have expected this, but you really pep-talked me up for the thon. Because I was really worried about that exact phenomenon of us being places where people were not expecting to overhear part of a podcast. And you said, look, just we have to just like basically get into character. We're just people that do this thing. And I did that, and it felt great that week. I didn't feel very much embarrassment, but apparently I forgot your sage advice about 2 minutes before the show because, yeah, it was definitely like people are walking by. They're like, okay, why is this guy yelling Yahats? We all know where we are. There's no reason to yell it, sir.
No, you and again, I hesitated to say that. It was just that the conversation was sort of naturally leaning towards there. You sound fine, and again, it's not like – you have to sound the same all the time, like, you know, shouting in our studios. You sound – I'm glad that you're there. I have never heard of Yahats before, but I'm glad you're there.
Me neither. I just learned it's not called Yakets.
Oh, Yakets.
It looks like it should be.
Don't talk back.
Yahats. I'm just going to try to do a yakety yak, but say Yahats, and that fell apart. It looks like it would be pronounced – it's like Y-A-C-H – maybe ATS, but it is in fact Yahats. And every time I say that, I want to say Yahats, like right. That Yahoo yodeler from about 20 years ago.
Right, which I never went in for. Yahoo still exists. Does Yahoo still exist is the other question.
It does because people can't get enough chocolate water.
Yeah, you're not a big fan. Yeah.
It's got to be a Utica thing where like basically – if you grew up with it, it makes total sense. But if you didn't grow up with it, like I did not grow up with it, it seems kind of gross to me.
You know, I had it a few times as a kid. We weren't like well stocked in it. Like we were well stocked in that New York seltzer that was pretty that had its moment in the 80s and then a resurgence recently. And we were well stocked on Verner's. My mom was obsessed with Verner's.
Yeah. Verner's has a ginger beer that my parents are just wild for.
Oh, really? It's kind of a new, so it's not the straight up old, because Verner's was like ginger ale, but it was a ginger ale that tasted like no other ginger ale that almost had a medicinal taste. But we had a lot of that in our refrigerator, maybe because they knew that we wouldn't drink it. I don't know. Anyway, I had a Yoo-hoo or two in my day. I remember it being a tasty treat. I don't think it's something I would want to go back to. You know what I was having a nostalgic I'm sorry. First of all, we've just been so middle-aged on the show recently, or at least I feel like I have been, just like taking it back to
speak for yourself.
Sorry, that was on me. Nostalgia town. And also, there's a chance this has already come up, so get out your bingo cards. But anyway, I was having a distinct nostalgic, I went on this nostalgic rant in my head. Not rant. Sorry, I'm losing my words. We'll start over. Okay, in 3, 2, 1. I was going down memory lane.
And I don't want to get in your head, but you sound like a person who doesn't want anyone to overhear you co-hosting this podcast.
Like literally the people who I'm going to be distributing it to in an hour. my apologies for that. I totally lost my words there. You know, I'm going to tell the story. I'm just going to tell the story from the damn beginning. That's what you all get from me forgetting my words.
I thought you were going to say, I'm going to tell this story through song.
I was walking with Genevieve. On Friday night, we were going to go get dinner at a Chinese restaurant in our neighborhood, and I passed. This is a weird journey I'm taking you on. You don't need this lead-up, but it's the only way I could get back into my groove. And I passed a piece of detritus on the ground in somebody's kind of garden, actually, along Roosevelt, and it was a cap for one of those Starbucks bottles of – what do they call those things? A little like kind of cappuccino in a bottle.
Frappuccino, but like is that what they call the one that's in the glass container?
Maybe. That sounds right. So let's say Frappuccino. Everybody knows what I'm talking about, right? It was just a little piece of litter. It was just the metal cap. And for a second, it must have triggered something in my brain that made me
think. I know exactly
where
you're going with this.
That it seemed like litter from an old-timey, from like it just seemed old because so much of our litter and bottle caps, they are plastic. And then that sent me, I don't know why, where do you think I'm going to go?
I thought you were going to say it reminded you of a Snapple cap.
No, very close, though. It reminded me of the old Gatorade bottles. And I was telling Veeves, I drank a lot of Gatorade growing up, or maybe like when I was playing like freshman football or what have you. And I drink it a lot as an adult now, too, especially when I'm like going to the gym. And at some point, they made the transition from the glass bottles with the metal lids to plastic bottles. And I don't remember that change happening. I don't remember having any opinions on it. I mean, I couldn't, you know, maybe it just happened when I was in high school and not drinking a lot of Gatorade. And then when I started drinking Gatorade as an adult, they were plastic bottles and I didn't think anything of it. Until recently, I don't know if it was in a TV commercial or I think it was an old TV commercial maybe we were talking about on After These Messages. And everybody had the old glass bottles of Gatorade. And I was just overwhelmed with nostalgia, for I could feel it in my hands. It kind of had that almost marbly outside of the glass container.
Like, I think pebbled a little bit.
Perfect word. And probably that was by design so that people who are sweating and working out, the bottle wouldn't slip out of their hands, right? And then the big G that I believe was kind of emblazoned or kind of built into the glass was smooth. Like, I could feel it in my hand. I could hear the pop of the metal lid popping, you know, the freshness seal popping as I opened it. And I was just like overcome with this. And I was like, it's not like something that I bemoaned. Like McDonald's, I recently learned in the past couple of years, you know, stopped selling the high C orange, and I bemoaned that. I don't remember bemoaning the design change, but man, I wouldn't mind getting my big old hand around an old school Gatorade bottle.
I mean, they've switched everything to plastic, and I wonder if that is because isn't plastic arguably worse right now for the environment than glass? Was it just a cost measure? Because glass seems much more recyclable, much more easily recycled than plastic, right?
It seems that way. I mean, I'm the wrong person to ask, and I'm sure people in our audience will know better. But I think, though, it's got to be a cost thing. It's got to be, like, much less expensive to produce the plastic bottles. And we're not huge on glass litter. Like, let's face it, like, litter is a problem, and having glass bottles all over the place, or especially, like, if you are on a football field or a tennis court and somebody drops one of those things, there's an advantage to it not being glass, too.
I always apply that principle to alcohol. I try to not buy any like liquor in a shatterproof bottle.
Me too,
because I feel
man.
Like the manufacturer at that point has already indicated what their opinion of you is.
There is.
They're like, you're probably going to be dropping this, so let's just make it plastic.
When I go to my local Safeway, they have their booze section. You have to hit a little call button so that somebody will unlock it for you. And you can get your booze out of there. And as you know, Luke, I'm a Jim Beam person myself, and they have the glass bottles, like a glass fifth, and then next to it they have the plastic kind that you see scattered on the ground outside, you know? And they always ask me which one I want, and sometimes they're out of the glass one and they give me the plastic one, and I'm buying the exact same amount of the exact same liquor, but I feel like such a dirtbag with the plastic bottle.
I know exactly. I would go to a different Safeway. Hey, what's up, little Luke? My nephew, by the way, is wandering by to admire to see what Uncle Luke does for work. And, you know, the look on his face is telling.
I thought it was a Roomba, man. I was like, oh, no.
Hey, I have human friends, too, like my nephew, Luke.
If you get another Roomba, name it Little Luke, man.
Oh, man. Speaking of kind of nostalgia trips, let me just say on the subject of, like, the Gatorade bottle and the Snapple bottle, this is what I really miss about that era of drink containment, is that, like you said, that lid popping to let you know that this had not been tampered with. There was just something very, I feel like that's not part of the plastic drink experience anymore.
Yeah. And this,
it's more that little
Snapple too, right? Snapple was the same exact thing.
And the Snapple had those little jokes and riddles and questions and things on the inside of the cap.
Right. And then Nantucket Nectars tried to, like, kind of bite their rhyme a little bit, right? And they would have little facts about New England. Did you drink Nantucket Nectars?
I didn't. I've seen it, and I know that it was ubiquitous, but I didn't have a lot of it. Here's my question. Is Snapple still a thing?
I believe so. I think so.
Okay. I guess it's just not something that I interact with a ton. Anyway, speaking of nostalgia trips, you'll appreciate this, Andrew. This is a very lovely house that Sarah and Josh rented, but it does have some elements of that, like, kind of beach cabin, lake cabin vibe that I love so much. We're just talking about this over coffee a little bit earlier, which is like when you're a kid and you stay somewhere, maybe your family rents a little cabin and it's just got kind of like a random assortment of books and games, and maybe the games are even missing a few pieces mm-hmm. or clues. I am holding down my show sheet with a DVD. It's Uncle Buck.
It'd be better if it's windy. VHS, but that's still pretty
well,
good.
Well, they do have some VHS too, but I just grabbed what was nearby because I've got this, again, I've got this sliding glass door open for reasons that elude both the listeners and me at this point because I'm kind of cold and it's noisy and it's making me quiet. But it's also blowing the show sheet off of my little makeshift workspace. And so I reached over to where like the TV is to grab something, and it was a DVD of Uncle Buck, which I just feel like is, you're right, maybe a VHS tape would be the platonic ideal of this idea, but just the fact that they've got Uncle Buck on DVD here and I could watch it if I want to, even though I could go home and watch Uncle Buck on 40 different streaming services, I like the idea that it's sitting here on a DVD.
Do me a favor. When you're done with the show, go around the house and count up how many Ian Fleming books you can find in the bookshelf.
Right.
I don't know if that's universal or not. Definitely, like, I feel like there is a vibe of the kind of books that you always find in a lake house and or a beach house or a lake house, and I love it so much. And, you know, there's a randomness and there's a beach read vibe. Now, I do know there is one specific cabin that, like, a family member rented. This is, like, going back 15 years or more, maybe, that it was kind of a get together for Genevieve's family, and this one cabin happened to have like tons of Ian Fleming books. So that's, I don't know if that's like kind of a universal, but generally speaking, though, I love the bookshelves.
Lots of spy stuff. Okay, hold on, stay right where you are. Okay. I'm going to step over to the bookshelf. Now I'm on the ground floor. There's a couple of different floors to this place, and so I don't know. I can't speak to the upstairs and what the selection is there. But see you guys later. Everybody's going on a walk without me, Andrew. Oh, so lest the listeners think that this job isn't a sacrifice, I'm missing out on a beach walk.
No joke. Go grab. How much do you just want to get? And listen, I'm not saying this to disrespect the listeners, but how much do you just want to get through the show today so you can enjoy beach life?
You know, I'm bored of these people in this house. I'm actually excited to talk to you. I've been with them for a while. It's like, all right, we get it. Let's get some new stories. Sweet. Get some new anecdotes.
Right,
go
answer.
Take a picture of a Gatorade cap, please, and then tell me about it.
Go find some.
Hold on. I'm going to just reach over and grab like three or four books and then run through them. We'll see if they fit in with
good.
The idea of beach book vibe. Hold
okay,
on.
Okay, that sounds
second.
Good.
Okay, hold on. Coming back. Got them. This is a lot. All right, here we are. Andrew, this is a freaking trove.
What do you got?
This is trove.
I'm going to look them up.
Just based on the top book that I see here. So I've got like, I don't know, 10 books. Just the top one is right out of Central Casting. John Grisham, The Rainmaker.
Oh,
I mean,
I don't
come
know
on,
that particular
dude.
Title, but yeah, Grisham is right.
I mean,
on
that
target.
Was, I forget who was in it. They made a movie out of this. It's as you might imagine, a legal thriller.
Huh, that was turned into a movie, huh?
Yeah, believe it or not, I hope you're sitting down. This is a John Grisham book that was turned into a movie. Okay.
Francis Ford Coppola directed. No kidding.
Okay. Wasn't Matt Damon
in
that?
Yeah, it's Matt Damon. I was looking at his face, and I just was getting to his name. And then Danny DeVito,
okay.
Danny Glover. Wow, a lot of Dannys. Claire Danes, uh-huh. Who I call Claire Danny, so that's cool.
Right? I don't know this name, but I bet you our listeners will. Somebody named Graham Masterton. The book is The Devil in Gray. Let me just read you the back of it.
Please. I love this.
Okay. This is a little dark, by the way. Trigger warning.
Okay.
I'm just reading it as it's printed on the book, but it's a little violent. So I apologize. And if you're sensitive to that, I just want to give you a heads up. A young woman brutally hacked into pieces in her Virginia home with a weapon over 100 years old. A retired army officer butchered by an invisible attacker. A young man blinded in his bathtub, then boiled alive. Well, garbage is here, Andrew. You'll be relieved to know.
Oh, is that what that is? Nice. It was a good garbage day over here, by the way.
Oh, good. Glad to hear it. Yeah. What malevolent nightmare stalked them? This is some kind of... So this is like a supernatural thriller, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, though, is... So that's Graham Masterton. And then the next book is by someone called Faye Kellerman. And I swear to God, these are almost the same book. Maybe the same person wrote both of them under different nom de plumes. This is from the international bestseller of... This book is Jupiter's Bones. Okay, I'm legit going to shut this because that garbage truck is super loud.
It's just a theater of the mind, though.
Well, again, this is, I mean, since we're already saying things that are inappropriate or might trigger the listeners, this is basically porn for you, right, Andrew? The sound of
a garbage truck?
A garbage
yeah.
truck rolling up on time as scheduled, ugh. Running down the driveway, getting, here we go, Andrew, drink it up.
Oh. thank you. You give him a wave.
I waved at him.
Nice, nice.
So this Faye Kellerman book looks like it's written by the same person, or certainly published by the same people who published the Graham Masterton book, because they're just kind of from that genre.
Before you give it away, tell me, is her book a Peter Decker novel or a Rena Lazarus? Apparently, these are her series.
This is a Dr. Emil Gans.
Gans.
Dr. Emil Gans was always extraordinary in death as well as life. A physicist whose theories of cosmology thrilled the world, he disappeared at the peak of his fame to emerge years later as Jupiter, leader of a community that preached a bizarre blend of mathematics and mysticism. I'd read that, actually. That didn't sound terrible.
Do you know that Kellerman sued the writers of Shakespeare in Love because she feels they stole the plot line from her 1989 novel, The Quality of Mercy?
I can't believe that you would just happen to know that off the top of your head.
I'm a Kellerman head, man.
Yeah.
Real heads know, as you might say.
One. Next up, again, primo summer reading, Michael Connelly. The Brass Verdict.
Ooh, tell me about this. Now, I feel like my mom had some Michael Connellys kicking around the house.
Yeah, like Michael Connelly is I have not read his stuff, but I know people love him. Like, he's like one of the best-selling authors, like, in American history. After 2 years of wrong turns, defense attorney Mickey Haller is back in action. His former colleague Jerry Vincent has been slain, and Haller inherits his biggest case yet, defending a Hollywood producer accused of multiple murders. With a key part of the defense strategy missing, Haller scrambles to prepare for trial, then files for discovery, a motion that is turned down by the judge. Then he asks for a change of venue. I'm kidding. I'm adding in what's the most boring legal component of this story.
Although I got to say, so this guy is writing more of that kind of crime noir detective stuff, and that is my jam. That is my summer jam. That is my vacation jam. In fact, I just bought an old school one. I had an appointment the other day, but I arrived way too early by bus, and there was a bookstore nearby, and I hadn't been to a bookstore in forever. Also, literally the largest / fattest cat I've ever seen in my life. Probably not very healthy for the cat, but amazing to look at. Just, I've seen some big cats. I've just never seen a cat that was so disproportionately big for its frame. Anyway, I bought a Dashiell Hammett book there. So that goes back to, like, I think that's probably like the 1940s or whatever. But I love that stuff. I love noir-y kind of detective books, both the neo-noir ones and the old ones.
Can I just mention, Andrew, that Santa came early and came back. Mm. A second garbage truck is now swinging by. They must be like the people that do the recycling.
Mm-hmm. Yes, or they heard, you know, hey, there's a guy who waves at us when we go down the
street. They were like, we've got a garbage enthusiast podcast that's recording in Yahats. Let's just give them the, here we go. So not one, but two visits from the refuse ferry here in Yahats. Okay, let's wrap this up with a little Patricia Cornwell, predator, or as our friend Camaro Kev would say, predator.
Patricia Cornwell. Is this a name that sounds familiar to you then, huh?
Oh, yeah. Patricia Cornwell is a very, very, very beloved and best-selling author of all kinds of – she writes these Dr. K. Scarpetta mysteries, and in fact, that's what this one is, Predator.
Oh.
Predator is the terrifying new Dr. K. Scarpetta novel from America's number one best-selling crime writer. Scarpetta, now freelancing with the National Forensic Academy in Florida, digs into a case more bizarre than any she has ever faced, one that has produced not only unusual physical evidence, but also tantalizing clues about the inner workings of an extremely cunning and criminal mind.
I could get into that. Oh, man. You know what I was thinking today, and I know you said that we should go to a break here, which we should. So I have this Dashiell Hammett book, which I just started reading, and I'm really enjoying it, and it's making me feel, like I said, I kind of got those summer vibes, which is weird because these things tend to be dark. But, they're page-turners.
Isn't he? I mean, I know the name Dashiell Hammett. I mean, I've heard the name, but I couldn't tell you anything about what Dashiell Hammett writes, other than I feel like he's from the 50s, right? Or from a while ago?
40s, maybe. Okay. And he's the one who wrote the Sam Spade character.
Oh, okay.
Which, of course,
okay,
kind of defines the noir films.
Got it.
Right. So, Bogart, right? Yeah, that was Sam Spade.
Was he Sam Spade? I don't know. What about Mickey Spillane? That's a whole different person that's kind of Was Mickey Spillane the writer or the name of the character that somebody was writing that was also very Sam Spade?
I feel like he was a crime novelist. Mickey Spillane was a crime novelist. Okay. I just looked that up right now. Anyway, one thought that I had is I might go take my book and sit in a coffee shop later. And I, you know, there are two coffee shops by my house, including one by our dear friend, Broadcast Barry, a coffee shop by our dear friend. That's not the verb I was looking for. I know that he and the staff have been extra careful during the quarantine. They haven't had any kind of in-store dining. But there's another coffee shop by my house, too. And I don't think they have opened up to allow people to sit in there and, you know, read books or whatever. And I guess it's like bars and restaurants have opened up, but coffee shops might have less of an incentive to do that. I have not talked to Barry about this side of things, but like, I almost wonder if like a coffee shop, I mean, in a certain way, you have somebody, they come in, they buy one cup of coffee, and they take up your real estate for...
Right. The like, money is not made probably in somebody surfing Indeed.com. Indeed. I guess that'd be more like maybe they were hiring, but like somebody sitting there working on their next great screenplay whilst nursing a cup of coffee is not really where the dough is probably in the coffee business.
Yeah, there's – and so especially if you want to keep your employees safe and they're just like why would we – like we're not going to sell a lot more coffee. Now, we've probably talked about this. Like I think we all have some sort of an internal clock, or those of us who are filled with a modicum of shame have an internal clock. Like I don't think I'll sit at a coffee shop certainly more than an hour without buying another drink, usually probably more like 45 minutes. But I know that other people do not have that clock. They'll probably buy like one Topo Chico and sit there for 4 hours. But
if
anyway,
they're in a cool coffee shop that mostly focuses on Topo Chico, then
exactly.
Yes.
But I miss that is my point. I just want to go sit in a coffee shop and read. I read better outside my house than in my house.
I think that might be the case for a lot of people. It certainly is for me, because inside my house there are too many distractions. And I just, you know, there are either things that I feel like I should do in some terms of tidying up or whatever, or it's just like I just know everything too well. I know how to turn on the television and operate it. I know I know instinctively what's on the DVR and has yet to be consumed. Like there's way too many distractions. But if you put me in a coffee shop with a book or a New Yorker, I'll actually read it, because I mean, this is a very unrelatable example, but when I was living in the Bay City of Bellingham, Washington, that's why I was obsessed with reading in the swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would get on this floaty and then I would have a book or a magazine, and it would be too much work to get out of the floaty. Again, I'm not saying this is hashtag relatable content. I'm just telling you it was the most kind of the most I concentrated on my reading, because I was separated from all the distractions that were on land, even though I was floating in a 10-foot by 20-foot, you know, section of water. It was enough that it just made me deeply engaged in the reading.
Yeah, and for me, like, there, even during the pandemic, there were a few times where I would, like, kind of sit at my kitchen table and maybe have a beer or a cup of coffee, depending on the type of – the time of day. I drink beer in the morning, coffee at night, of course, like any normal person. But no, I, like
– Can you drink coffee right before you go to sleep, though?
That's I'm not that cool, man.
Only Come for cool on. People.
I wouldn't try to steal your bit. But, like, I can sit at my little dinette table. You can picture it in our kitchen. We have kind of a little nook. Unfortunately, there's no window to look out or anything. But like, I'll put my little Bose speaker there, dial up some jazz or something that isn't going to distract me, and like sit there and like make a point of reading. I love that. But like, I'm not somebody who will just go sit on the couch and read, which is like how I'm sure like 99% of reading happens in America. It's like people like to, you know, sit in their favorite chair or comfy chair or couch. But like, if I'm doing that, like that's where I either get distracted by a video game or maybe a TV or most likely nodding off to sleep, you know? Like, I like to go somewhere, and that's where, like, if I'm in my kitchen reading, I'm kind of recreating the reading at a coffee shop or reading at a bar situation, because that's where I get most of my reading done. Like, the height of Andy's reading days were, like, I don't know, like, I guess college, maybe summer times during my college years where I'd come home, but I was a smoker. I didn't spend a lot of time at my house, so I'd always just go to a coffee shop and just park myself there for, like, I don't know, 3 hours, 4 hours a night, smoke cigarettes, drink coffee, and just, like, tear through, like, you know, like Vonnegut. I could read one of those a day, you know, because they're so easily consumable, and, like, that was all I was doing. I wasn't distracted by other things.
I am so lucky that, like, this, for instance, is a job I have, and also, like, the Livewire radio show gig. And there are some – our listeners are voracious readers. In fact, We should try to bring back some kind of book club element or some sort of group reading projects. I know our listeners love that kind of stuff because they're all brainiacs. And many of, I know, like, they're all like, oh my God, your job or one of your jobs, Luke, is to read books. That's your job. Like, what a lucky thing. And it is, of course, it does take on a certain homework feel sometimes. But I, you know, it's both a blessing and a curse for me because the only reason that I've read anything is now at this point is because it's for Livewire and we're going to interview the person. And so I need to read the book. Mm. And I end up reading a lot of stuff that I may or may not have like picked up. I recently read this Clint Smith book about, well, it's about the history of slavery in this country, but he goes to all these different locations that are relevant to, I mean, this is one thing that just blew my mind. He's talking about Angola State Prison in Louisiana. And he's saying, you know, this is built on what used to be a slave plantation. And now it's a prison. And the overwhelming majority of the people in the prison are black men. And he's like, if you leveled Auschwitz and then you built a prison on top of it, and then most of the people in that prison happened to be Jewish, you might say, huh, something about this system seems broken.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me in exactly that way. I mean, that is just an important and beautifully written book that I don't know if I would have picked it up if I wasn't about to interview the guy. But anyway, the blessing part of it is I get to read a lot of stuff. By the way, right now I'm getting mean mugged by a French bulldog, Andrew, which
aww,
is adorable. And also, I feel the most judged I've been
mm-hmm.
while doing this show sort of quasi for the public. Like, the people are mostly, I think it's windy, so the people can't hear me too clearly. But the dogs really pick up what's going on.
Uh-huh. Probably attracted by those squeaky brakes that we heard earlier.
Yeah, exactly. So
that sounded
they're the only they're the only ones who can hear it. But anyway, it's very lucky that I get to read books and that sometimes I have books, like I said, that are I may or may not have picked up just through my normal life, but now I'm reading them and I'm reading them pretty carefully because I'm going to talk to somebody about it. But the downside of the whole thing is I do very, very, very little recreational reading now.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can imagine.
Which I'm kind of bummed about because, like, you know, like this week is a relatively light week for me. We have Livewire is largely on tape. So I've got TBTL with you and a few other things going on. But I actually have a little time where I could be just reading recreationally. And maybe I'll try to make that a point this week. But it does what I think I need like 2 or 3 months away from my assigned reading
mm-hmm.
before picking up a book and just sitting with it will feel relaxing to me and not something that has a little bit of pressure woven into it.
Yeah. And you're not really somebody who goes into like I like my pulpy kind of detective books. You wouldn't even go in for that. Like your kind of recreational reading would still be probably like nonfiction or something like somewhat more serious than, you know.
I guess, but you know,
somebody was
murdered
in the swamp in Florida. Was it the Crocs? Or I guess alligators. Damn it, there are alligators in Florida,
you know,
not crocodiles.
I have to say though, like I have devoured a Carl to keep it in Florida. I've devoured a few Carl Hyacin books.
That's exactly obviously what I was referring to. Yeah, so have
like,
I.
I'm
on
down
vacation.
With that shit.
Yep, yep.
So no, I can get into that stuff. You know, again, to bring this all the way back to where we started, here I am in this beach home with this Uncle Buck DVD. Some of the most fun reading I've ever done in my life is when I was a kid and when my parents would. We had these friends that had a lake cabin, and I mean emphasis on the cabin. This thing was probably maybe 2 rooms total, and they had a big family, an extended family, and then we had a freaking massive family, and they for some reason would invite us out there, which was madness, and it would just be people sleeping everywhere. And they had all these books. And I remember just like reading lots of pulpy stuff, just sitting out on the screen porch in the middle of the day, just like tearing through these books and loving it. I mean, that's some of the most fun reading I've ever done in my life. Mm-hmm. So I do have a soft spot for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, especially like if you're in like some sort of a lake house or a cabin that has like the upstairs where there are like 7 beds for like kids
right.
or people staying over, and it's like the pitched roof, the pitched ceiling in there.
Right, it's
I can
a little
see
bit too low
reading.
For adults.
Exactly, I can see myself reading up there.
Yeah, so and then suddenly you're in the never ending story.
Yeah, that's no
which
good.
Is a whole drama. These look like good hands. It's hard to hold things against the nothing. You know, there's a friggin' dragon yelling Utreyu. gets complicated pretty fast. That's why I don't read anymore, Andrew. I don't want to get dragged into some kind of a never-ending story type sitch.
That's why I don't play Space Invader-style video games anymore because of the last Starfighter. I don't want to go up there and fight, Luke. I'm scared of heights.
I love the idea of, like, you somehow in the last Starfighter, but the most pressing issue for you is that you're afraid of heights. It's not... like, is that learning how to, like, operate the, like, weaponry on the gun? Was Louis Gossett Jr. in that, or was he in a different one that I always confuse with that film?
The only person who I know was in that film was the guy who was also in The Music Man, the movie from the 80s.
Oh, okay. All right, well, listen, this seems like as good a time as any to take a quick break, and then when we come back, do want to update you on what's going on with the Ultimate Slip and Slide Show, and all the other top stories that we have dialed up for you. So stay with us. This is TBTL.
Hello, and welcome to Top Story.
Filming of NBC's Ultimate Slip and Slide has been shut down indefinitely after dozens of crew members experienced awful explosive diarrhea, according to the network.
This story already has more details than I thought based on the verdict, because I had read this. I saw this headline going around. Sorry, I'm just going to interject right at the beginning here, because I will say that I'm actually not that I want more people to get sick, but you also said something when you were setting the story up at the top of the show that made me think that maybe there have been developments, or I just read the most boring version of this, because I was getting the impression that this is one of those things that sounds like a great headline, like, oh, imagine the combination of a slip and slide event and explosive diarrhea. But then the story I read basically said, yeah, there was an outbreak nearby and one or two people who are, like, you know, on the crew were affected by this. But it sounds like this is way bigger than whatever I read.
Yeah, according, I'm getting this from, well, I started out at the Wrap, .com, but then I don't have an account there, so then I had to pop over to the old New York Post, and, you know, they never disappoint on the gruesome details on a story like this. They said the sickening conditions left people collapsing on set and, quote, being forced to run to porta potties.
Good.
According to a source, here's, for some reason, I don't know why this is the part of the story that cracks me up. I guess this show is co-hosted by Ron Funches and Bobby Moynihan.
I'd heard of this. Like, yeah, I had saw a blurb about this a while back.
But, well, what's funny is I saw somebody retweeting. I think, you know, Katie Nolan from ESPN was retweeting Ron Funches' account. And Ron, of course, is a comedian. He's actually been on old TBTL a million years ago. But and I know you and Veeves were early fans of his in Seattle, Andrew.
Yeah, I think I'll take a little credit for having him on. In fact, I saw him and he blew us away. And so when he was back in town, I think I encouraged you to have him on the show.
So first of all, that just is an interesting team to host this this particular. I get the sense this is one of those game shows that's just about people getting massively like massively wet / massively shaken up, but in a safe way. Kind of like all those other games where there's a giant foam thing like whamming somebody off of a tightrope into a, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, this is a whole summertime television experience where people are being subjected to indignities that we hope won't kill them.
I feel like there's a little bit of a, you know, a Nickelodeon for the adult set vibe,
yes.
You know, and
real
also
Double Dare.
Yeah, Double Dare is exactly what I was thinking of. I couldn't quite conjure that, as you could tell. And also, I feel like this also was somewhat introduced a couple of seasons ago with a, it wasn't Rob Riggle, who hosted a putt-putt game on network television. Do you remember
this?
Oh,
I don't know. No, I don't.
Mini golf. Did you guys call it putt-putt? Did you know what I meant when I said putt-putt?
Yes, okay, I did. Yeah. We called it mini golf where I'm from, but I think it is also called putt-putt in much of the country.
I think there was a big, goofy version of putt-putt or mini golf that was it was hosted by a famous comedian, I think a Daily Show alum, which gets us into that. And also, isn't this a little bit inspired by the popularity of that one day a year ESPN goof called like the Ocho or something that I think originally was spawned out of some movie like maybe Basketball or something?
I think it might have been Dodgeball.
Oh, okay. Dodgeball, not Basketball. Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I remember because I think Jason Bateman, of all people, plays like a kind of ESPN play-by-play. I think the Dodgeball network is being played on the Ocho. in the narrative of that movie, and so maybe that's where it comes
I
from.
Think
but
you're right.
Basically,
yep.
they get a bunch of people, a bunch of famous athletes and other people doing these kind of silly parlor games or summertime games. There's also, I think ABC has like something called like the ABC Summer Games.
Oh, really?
Maybe that's more game showy. As far as like throwbacks, like the Match Game and things like that. But
I think it's a great idea, though. I just think it's like it's perfect. Like if you have a bar or you know a casual mm-hmm. restaurant with TVs, like you put this on, people will always get sucked into it. You don't have to have the volume on. It's also like the American Ninja Warrior a little bit too, you know. And those
right.
That Japanese game show that has the slippery stairs. Like I could watch.
Oh
that
my
for
god,
hours.
I could watch that for days.
Right, exactly.
For days. God, I think those stairs smart. Are so slippery.
Yeah, God, they really are. Oh man, I would.
You're like. Oh, I don't think those are that slippery. Wait, they're really slippery, aren't they? Anyway, Katie Nolan had retweeted Ron Funches, who was just, I forget exactly what he said, but what he was commenting on was like the headline was like NBC shuts down production due to explosive diarrhea. And then they're just using this headshot of Ron Funches
that was just part
of the media package for the Slip and Slide show. You know what I mean? Like this photo, in fact, I bet you this photo was taken long before they tapped him to be one of the hosts of the show.
Uh-huh.
It's just a standard Ron Funches. But when you put it next to the headline about explosive diarrhea, it gets decontextualized and recontextualized really fast.
Yes.
It becomes very funny. So I don't know why I love that detail of the story, but I did for some reason. Anyway, this is what NBC said. The health and safety of everyone on our set is our number one priority. So out of an abundance of caution, we made the decision to stop production of Ultimate Slip and Slide. We're in the process of determining the next steps. This is still from the New York Post. Many infected crew members blamed the mess on a lack of fresh, clean water being used in the slip and slide competitions.
Oh, see, whatever I read before was distinctly misleading, or the reporting was too early, because I thought this was related to an outbreak in a nearby town, but this sounds like this was something that was caused by the conditions of this actual set, as you just said.
I think they think it's Giardia.
Uh-huh.
By the way, Andrew, I think we may be having a third garbage removal truck show up on this blessed Monday.
Well, I said if you saw the second one, or I was going to say, like, yeah, look out for the third one because you got the – that's the triumvirate, right? The trifecta,
yes.
the yard waste.
The
recycling.
Ides of June.
Yes.
Always coming three.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they think – which, by the way, this is also a funny line from this article. The crew blames the lack of fresh, clean water that's being used in the slip and slide competitions. This is the next line that's great. At odds with the network's description of the show as, quote, a fresh take on Wham-O's iconic 1960s outdoor game. I don't know. People were probably getting Rhea from the iconic Wham-O game as well. You probably had some kids weren't, you know, greatest at hygiene at a young age out there slipping and sliding. Giardia can, I guess, survive on surfaces for some amount of time. Like, whatever was going on with this slip and slide could have been going on with somebody slip and slide in Levittown, New York, circa 1966 or something.
Yeah, yeah. That does not sound pleasant. I also love it when any for-profit organization says our number one priority is the safety of our staff. Well, there's something on the radio that's going on now that's all about people before profits, and I'm always yelling at it. I hear it, 100 times during a baseball game. I'm just like, I just don't think that's true because, I mean, you could run a nonprofit. Like, that would definitely put people above, of course.
Right.
You know what I'm thinking, though? That might be for a credit union. Are credit unions nonprofit? Anyway, it doesn't really matter.
I'm
always
sure
yelling at
that.
The radio.
Right.
Like, you don't put people before profit. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in a profit-making game.
Right, exactly. And even if you're talking about, BECU or WeCu or one of these, even these credit unions, I mean, maybe they're not reporting back to Wall Street, but everybody's making a pretty good living off of it. I don't know the exact status of those kinds of things. I can tell you, Andrew, that at the end of this article, you know how, like, now the thing that they'll do is they'll, like, hashtag or they'll cross-reference this article with other things
mm-hmm.
so that you perpetually keep reading this particular website. So, like, if you get to the end of an article, there's a bunch of other things you might find interesting because you've already shown an interest in this kind of topic.
Mm-hmm.
So the New York Post filed this under. These are the other things. I wish I had my bell. These are the other things that this slip and slide diarrhea story is filed under. It's filed under Bobby Moynihan, illness, NBC, television, and WTF.
That covers a lot of ground.
That's WTF is a pretty broad, broad brush.
Although I do feel also, like it's in the TBTL wheelhouse. I bet you click on that WTF, a lot of those things might fit our show sheet.
I bet so, but I also think it's interesting that they don't have Ron Funches on there.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about, no offense to Bobby Moynihan, who seems lovely, but I would argue there are more people who know the name Ron Funches in America than know the name Bobby Moynihan.
Oh, really? Wasn't Moynihan SNL?
He was SNL, but I wonder, like, I geek out on that stuff, so it's like I know, I could tell you, like, five Bobby Moynihan characters, but I don't, I mean, do you think the average person, I guess the average person who would know Ron Funches would probably know Bobby Moynihan. I guess that's kind of the same person, right?
I think so. I mean, you and I come at this from complete opposite perspectives because you follow the SNL people more. Let's just say that you are
and I'm a well-known Moynihan.
Right, exactly. No, but like, you know, I cannot follow who's in Saturday Night Live and who isn't and what have you. But like that name to me seems much bigger than Ron Funches. And you know I love me some Ron Funches. But I feel like Moynihan was established earlier than him. And I don't know. Again, I could be totally wrong. But from my more ignorant point of view, it seems like Moynihan's a much bigger name.
Seems to me, though, if you're going to go ahead and file it under NBC and WTF.
That I agree with.
You want to throw a little Funches on there. Why don't we stop? Please stop erasing Ron Funches from the cross reference point of the New York Post. This Jeff Bezos story is kind of interesting to me. So they announced recently that he and his brother are going to go into space as part of this new, you know, he and Elon Musk obviously are both kind of, and I think the Paul Allen's foundation also is working on something. Although I get the sense like the Paul Allen interests were more around just like
science,
really long flights around the globe that didn't need refueling. I think that was something he was into and was funding. But the announcement came out recently that as part of this, I think it's called Blue Origin, which is the name of Bezos's like space company. That Bezos and his brother are going to ride up into space and that they're auctioning off a seat. That seat went for $28 million this weekend, and they have not identified who the person was who actually won the auction. 7,600 people from 159 companies had registered, countries rather, had registered and were bidding on the auction, by the way. So that's like a lot of people that I guess I wonder how many of those people seriously thought they were going to be able to like win it just based on bidding the most. That's a lot of people or maybe people were just doing it as a joke. I don't know if you had to like submit some kind of financial data to be approved to even bet. I keep saying bet, but bid on this thing. But I find it when you read into what's actually going to happen, they're going to be technically in space for 11 minutes. They are going to head above the 62-mile mark, which is the altitude that is internationally considered to be the boundary of outer space. So this thing they're on is going to go technically into space for 11 minutes and then come back down. And I'm not saying it's not high up. I'm not saying it wouldn't stress you out, Andrew, with your well-documented fear of heights. But it ain't like you're going to the moon.
Yeah.
And my thought on this was, you're Jeff Bezos. You are, like, I mean, you are ludicrously wealthy at this point. I mean, in the time it takes me to say Jeff Bezos made $1 billion, he's made $1 billion.
Well, ironically, he's made $2 billion. And then how it takes you to say Jeff Bezos made $1 billion.
It's like, bro, go to Pluto.
Right.
Like, aim higher. Aim higher than 11 minutes barely in space. Aim higher than, like, something that is only a little bit above what Air Force pilots do in pressurized airplane environments sometimes when they're flying these very high, like, spy missions and stuff. Like, I don't know. It just, I feel like if I was Jeff Bezos, I would not settle for 11 minutes barely in space.
It sounds like that makes it sound like he just wants his name on being the first, right? Like it's not about
the first what though?
Just the first what? Like is it the first like in a civilian? No, I guess not. I guess he's not the first. Well, he'd definitely be the first of these like kind of three, you know,
right,
wealthy names to go up in his own spacecraft when you consider.
Is he trying to like own Elon Musk with this or something?
It sort of feels that way, doesn't it? Especially knowing that that is what the mission is, quote-unquote mission?
Yeah, one of the things they mentioned in this article, too, is like the Elon Musk stuff is much more ambitious. I mean, obviously, he's like floated the whole Mars idea, but even in terms of the level of space that Elon Musk is going to try to take people to with SpaceX, like regular people who just want to buy a ticket, it's – oh, by the way, I can't leave Richard Branson out of this.
Oh, right,
he's also,
right, of course, yeah.
You know, doing this. There's just – God – do you think it's fun to be that rich, or is it exhausting? Because clearly these dudes at some point are like very and Alexander wept for there were no more worlds to conquer. Like, why do they all want to go into space? Or in the case of like James Cameron, go to the bottom of the ocean. It's like terra firma is no longer interesting enough when you have unlimited experiences because of your money, I guess.
Yeah, and I also feel there's hubris in there as well. I mean,
oh, man.
The one thing that also all these guys have in common is they like to put people before profits. And that's what I really – that's why I respect them all.
Yeah, like I – anyway, yeah, Elon is supposedly his thing if it ever fully comes to fruition. The people will get to be like more in space, higher up into space or whatever. But I mean, really, like if I'm Bezos and I want to go to space, I'm just personally funding a moon mission. Yeah. I'm not just doing this to try to like keep the needles moving or be funny. I'm like, if you're going to do it, bro. And like go to the moon and walk on the moon. That would be like, that would be insane. Mm-hmm. Being like in effectively what is a vomit comet, right? You know, they do those flights. I know producers from CBS Sunday Morning who've gotten to go on the vomit comet flight.
Really?
Where they take you up, and they don't go into space, but they do these controlled, you know, also would be triggering some of your fear of heights. They do, you know, they take you up in this specially designed jet, and then they do these controlled drops where the terminal velocity is being achieved, so you're weightless. And I think you're probably weightless for like 5-6 minutes or something when you're doing that thing. Like, that's more or less, I think, the experience that Jeff Bezos and these people are going to have.
Just for the record, you've mentioned my fear of heights a couple of times. I just want on the record that if, you know, any of these adventures came my way, it would trigger all kinds of anxieties for me. I mean, fear of heights is on there, but just like fear of the world, fear of my own clumsiness, fear of everything would kick in with one of these things.
You wouldn't do it. You would not do it. If offered the chance, like you just
so. You
pulled the golden ticket, not to go to the moon, because the moon is kind of scary, because if you get stuck there, I mean, the Wi-Fi is beyond spotty.
I mean, how would we even do the show? It seems like
exactly. But like, I legitimately would. I would have real. I would think long and hard about going to the moon because I do feel like there's a decent chance of getting stuck. But I would, if I drew the ticket, I would do this Bezos thing because honestly, to me, famous last words, and I hope I'm not jinxing anything. It feels relatively low risk, relatively controlled. You're not trying to travel to another planet, you're just going really high up and going around the Earth or whatever and then coming back down. So would you do that if the opportunity were presented to you?
You know, that question makes me realize and I'm just realizing this right now, I have something that could maybe be referred to as a reverse bucket list, where the older I get, I just cross things off this list, not based on me doing them, but then me just realizing, oh, I don't want to do that anymore because I'm in most cases too scared, or in some cases it would take too much effort. Like, that is the saddest bucket list in the world. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure a younger person, like a much younger person, let's say, you know, as a kid, you asked me if you had an opportunity to go to space in a rocket and just, like, fly around up there and come back and you don't have to walk on the moon or anything, would you do it? I'd be like, of course I would. Okay, would you put on scuba gear and go scuba diving? Yes, I always was fascinated by that as a kid, the idea of a whole world being under the sea. And then you get older and you learn about all kinds of things that can happen in these situations. Or
you could be eaten by a whale. Did you hear about that guy in Maine?
Yes, we should talk about that. He was like, I thought I was being attacked by a shark, but then I realized there were no teeth, and I realized I'm inside of a whale.
God, what a strange way for his brain to quickly assess the situation, and it was lack of teeth.
Yes, I know. But anyway, so I mean, you know, like I realized, oh, I'm claustrophobic. I could never go in a submarine. And there's a big, you know, you can't be a scuba diver if you're claustrophobic at all because it can get on top of you. And it's like all these realizations about my own limitations, and I'm just crossing these things off my list. So, Luke, to answer your question, honestly, it depends on the circumstances. I'd obviously have to think really long and hard about it before turning down an opportunity to go into space. So,
right.
I mean, just knowing you know, knowing what the risks are, and it would be really hard to turn that down. I think I'd have to really think about it. But you also know me well enough to know that I know what my boundaries are. And if I decided that it wasn't for me, I would say it's not for me. And I think I could be okay with that. I don't think I'd live the rest of my life saying, oh, I wish I'd gone into space.
What would be more unpleasant or a more stressful environment? Hitchhiking with me down the Mississippi River or going into space with Jeff Bezos and his brother?
That's a really good question. Now, we have our own ship, though, right? We don't have to wait for a Martian to pick us up.
No, that's the good news.
Okay, good. I don't know. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
All right, any emails or V-mails that have risen to the top of the pile for you?
Yeah, I would like to read one email and play one voicemail, if that's okay. This is a really sweet note that we got from listener Kelly. You and I were talking about loneliness the other day. It came about because of the story about these kind of, I'll call them like quasi-robotic cats that will kind of respond to you petting it by purring and
but only
meowing.
If they're turned on before you're yes. promoting them on QVC.
Exactly. And there was a New Yorker article that was really touching that talked about people who are of a certain age or circumstance where they cannot care for live animals anymore, but they're feeling, you know, very intense loneliness, especially during the pandemic, and how these animals help them out, or these robots or these toys, these devices help them out. Listener Kelly wrote, and by the way, I've received, and I haven't responded to all of them yet, I've received some very, very touching, vulnerable emails from listeners talking about their own struggles with loneliness that, you know, I don't yeah. think are mostly to be shared on the show. But I haven't responded to all of them yet, but I wanted to say thank you to everybody for sending them in. I have read them, and it's very touching.
Can I echo that, Andrew?
Yeah.
Because I think maybe midway through talking about that story, that New Yorker piece, it started to occur to me that this was the kind of conversation that would probably resonate with a lot of people mm-hmm. and would sort of present the opportunity for them to tell us about their experience. And I my intention is to respond to those emails. But if you send in an email on that topic, I also have read it and hear you and see you. And I'm in the process of trying to get back to folks. Mm-hmm. But you want to yeah. – that's not something that was like – thanks for writing in.
Yeah,
best
exactly. Right. Yeah, so. Exactly. Right. So, well, anyway, here's a really touching story that Kelly sent in, our pal Kelly, who says, as I was listening to the story about the robot cat, it made me think about a woman I met in the hospital a few years ago. This was the summer of 2018. After the year from hell with some things going on with Kelly's family, I ended up hospitalized for a week in July. Before I was taken to the hospital, my daughter handed me a pink stuffed dog she called Mr. Hugger Dog. While in the hospital, patients are required to go to group therapy sessions. The group shifted as the week went on, as people were admitted and released. In the middle of my stay, an older woman was admitted. After hearing different people share their story, this woman explained how she'd been suffering with depression for over 40 years and finally decided to seek treatment. She then talked about how she had always wanted a dog, but she couldn't get a real one. So she had the idea years ago to get a stuffed dog. However, she felt like that was silly. The group vociferously told her she should absolutely get a stuffed dog if it would bring her joy and comfort. She said maybe she would. The group took a break shortly after her story, and I went to my room and I saw Mr. Hugger Dog sitting on my bed. I grabbed him and brought him with me to the meeting. I told the woman that my daughter had given me Mr. Hugger Dog when I left the house as comfort, and that he definitely had more hugs to give. Her eyes lit up.
Aww.
As I can. Yeah, I know, right? Her eyes eyes lit up as I handed her that pink fluffy dog. She hugged him tightly, laughed, and cried. It was such an amazing moment. She handed Mr. Hugger Dog back to me, and she said she was going to get herself a stuffed dog as soon as she got home. I'm not really a believer in all that mystical stuff, but there's no doubt in my mind that she and I and Mr. Hugger Dog were in the hospital at the same time for the same reason. It is something I won't forget, and yes, Mr. Hugger Dog is still a member of our family. How sweet is that, Luke? Cute. Very cute.
Very cute. I think Mr. Hugger Dog is a pretty solid name, too, for a stuffed animal.
I agree. Or even, I don't know, a musical artist.
Or a reggaeton artist.
Yeah, exactly. Like I like
I'm
it.
The lyrical gangster, Hugger Dog.
Okay, now let me play a voicemail from you, or for you. This is not from you. If you would leave a voicemail, Luke, I would play a voicemail from you, but instead...
Not technically part of my job responsibilities, and we've talked about this with Lily and Alex, okay?
Do you remember the time I did play a voicemail from you, and I insisted it wasn't you, and you said, no, that's my voice? Do you know what I'm talking about?
What was that?
You were singing. Somebody had left a voicemail on our line, and I found it, and I used it as intro tape or something, and it was somebody singing, Don't You Know That You're My Hero, I think. I think that was the song, and I played it, and you said, why did you use my voice at the beginning of the show? And I'm like, I don't think that's you. That was on the voicemail line. We went round and around, and then somebody revealed themselves. Like, yeah, they just took that from a section of the show where you were singing and played it back into our voicemail line. Man, if we ever run out of content, we can just have people play parts of the show back to us on the voicemail line. Anyway, this is not from you. This is from listener Amy.
Hi, this is Rachel.
Nope. I don't know why I wrote that it's listener Amy in my notes. But hey, at least...
You know it was a biblical name.
At least I have notes. They don't have to be right, do they? All right, this is listener right. Rachel, or as I like to call her, Amy.
Hi, this is Rachel. I am Pittsburgh 10, and I'm also a therapist. And I was calling because I have a few therapy-related comments. So first is about dreams and, Luke, your theory that bad dreams are better than good. Well, so I work with a lot of trauma clients, and one of the interesting things, like some of the research is showing, is that for a lot of people, Luke, you're right, bad dreams help them process bad things, right? And so it helps you process and you come up, and even if you're still feeling kind of crappy from that dream, it helps you understand the situation better. Maybe it helps you to enjoy your experience in the present better, right, as a, like a waking experience. But people with PTSD are actually further traumatized by their dreams. They do not have any kind of recovery, positive response to it. So we're not sure which came first, if people with sleep-related disorders have a vulnerability there, and that maybe is what is a kind of factor to PTSD or not, or if the trauma causes the dreaming to be less bad. And secondly, and more on a, I guess, upbeat note, Luke, you always talk about how we don't do what our child version of ourselves said we should do. There's another therapist that I follow on social media, and they wrote, my kid told me they couldn't wait to be an adult where, you know, they could do nothing but sleep in all day and watch TV and eat candy. They said, I didn't have the heart to tell them that they were describing depression. So, thanks, guys. Look forward to seeing you soon when you tour the Rust Belt for your TBTLthon 2022. Okay, bye.
A lot of Rust Belters out there on that campaign.
Yeah, we may have to get out to that part of the world for the next round of this stuff. Because, well, first of all, Rachel, Amy, thank you for the voicemail and the feedback. Not to overshare about there was a conversation at one point about us going to the Rust Belt for this last thon, and some of the logistics didn't quite work out, but just know that it's on our radar and something that we want to do. That's very interesting about the dreams. I know that I am not a therapist or psychologist or psychiatrist, but I do know that for people with certain kinds of trauma, it does seem to be helpful to actually revisit the moment of the trauma and experience it and process it and work through it. But then I guess PTSD is a whole different animal where probably the response is you're so triggered that it's impossible for there to be any kind of like healthful, you know, kind of reassessing of things because you're just in total survival mode as you think, as your body is reacting to being re-traumatized. So
Yeah, and that causality thing that Amy brings up. I'm sticking with Amy. Why are you hiding, Amy? That's what I want to know. What's with the nom de plume? I think that causality thing that she brings up is interesting because, like, is there a chance? Because you could have people who go through, like, this, you know, the same or very similar incredibly traumatic experiences, but some might walk away with actual diagnosable PTSD and others can't, and others don't. And so what is the difference there? And it could have to do with the way the brain works, and the type of sleeper you are could be an indicator of what kind of brain you have too. That's interesting.
Yeah, we still haven't gotten to that. Oh, God, I was having weird dreams this morning because I wasn't sleeping in my normal bed, and I was kind of in that liminal space for like an hour or two where I was like kind of awake but kind of asleep. We haven't gotten to that story yet about the scientists actually maybe being able to kind of help us, push us in a direction for dreaming. Maybe we'll get into that this week.
Yeah, there's some interesting stuff in there. I don't usually care about dream talk, but I'll make an exception for you. I went through a big phase where I was not really having any dream. It's funny, like, you would think that the more stressed out my brain would be, the more I would remember my dreams because I'm probably not sleeping as well. And I feel like I remember my dreams better when I'm having them in those moments, like you said, like you wake up, maybe you wake up and go to the bathroom or something, and you go back to bed for an hour or two. It's like, I feel like it's those last 2 hours where you're going to remember your dreams because you might not be so deeply asleep. I will tell you, though, Luke, that leading up to the TBTL-a-thon, I don't remember having really any dreams at all. I feel like ever since we've gotten back, I have had dreams, like vivid dreams that I remember every night. And I think I told you this definitely off air, maybe on the show already too. At first, they were all TBTL-a-thon related in some way. I'm driving a funky vehicle, or you're driving a funky vehicle and I'm telling you that you've driven too much, like you should really let me take the wheel, or like I'm trying to post a show. Did I tell you this? Like I went to somebody's house, like there was supposed to be the final live broadcast, but I didn't bring any of my gear with me. Now that has kind of slipped into the background. I'm just having other dreams again, but like there's something about my brain, like I'm not that stressed out right now, and I'm just having great, mostly fun dreams, although some of them, a lot of them are kind of somewhat stress dreams because I'm up against a clock or, like I say, I've forgotten my equipment.
I had a dream this morning. I was dating someone who reminded me of the actress Jennifer Coolidge.
Oh, yeah. Good thing they made Big Trains because they inspired Model Trains. I'm messing up that joke, but that's Jennifer Coolidge.
Is that from like one of those like Best in Show, one of those Christopher Guest things?
Yes. I think. Oh, she says, "Oh, thank God for Model Trains." Yeah. Anyway, I know who she is.
I don't remember details, and I promise you, it was appeared to be a non physical thing. But I just remember being in this big house and being like, "This is weird that I'm dating a Jennifer Coolidge type." That's my takeaway, Andrew, and this is why. This is why we don't talk about dreams on the show, because they make no sense, and there are not enough dazzling deets around them.
This is why we do talk about dreams on the show, and why we always
because now you know I've got a thing for Stifler's mom.
Yeah. Wait, Stifler's mom? What is that?
I believe that she is the mom in American Pie.
Oh, okay. I never saw
something.
That.
I don't know. I haven't seen that. I don't see you as a big American Pie watcher. No, I could be wrong about that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it's not usually my
She's
thing.
Either Stifler's mom or Stacy's mom that Fountains of Wayne sang about. Somebody's quote-unquote hot mom. Anyway.
Oh, I know. Do you have a song you want to go out with? Because I have a song we could play, but it's not related to anything TBTL related, so it's easily vetoed if you don't want to do it.
No, let's do it. I mean, my only suggestion would be Stacy's Mom by Fountains of Wayne. But we have like big Fountains of Wayne heads in our audience. The lead singer of Fountains of Wayne, whose name is Adam Schlesinger, he passed away, which was a sad thing. And his catalog is deep. I know our friend the Stubot is a big Schlesinger head. But I feel like I wouldn't be doing him a disservice if we just played that song. So why don't we'll revisit that topic later, and for today, why don't you just play the song you had in mind?
Yeah, this is a song that's been going through my head all weekend. I think I might have heard it, like the end of it on Kixie or something, like on Friday, and then it's just been going through my head all weekend. And it's the song "Play Me" by Neil Diamond. And the bummer was, I was tweeting about this.
I saw you tweeting about this.
Do you know
weekend.
This song? I am the sun, you are the moon. So I had that line going through my head. And then we were at the Eagles on Friday, and I thought, oh, I'll play that Neil Diamond song. But I didn't look carefully on the jukebox, and I was playing the live version off of Hot August Nights, which is, you know, that's fine. I think Hot August Nights is considered one of the more kind of iconic live records of that era. But it's not, you know, it's just, it's not the album version. And, you know, it's just slowed down and it's just not as good. So I would like to rectify my mistake this weekend by playing the album version of Play Me by Neil Diamond off of Moods.
Mike and Tim, this one's going out to you. Anyone else who was at the Eagles and had their night ruined, this is a do-over. Now, the thing about this song is when I was a kid growing up, there was like one of those commercials that was running for like a, I don't know what you'd call it, like a kind of soft rock station.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess is that this was a commercial that was produced and like nationally. And if you were any local soft rock station, you could pay some amount of money to get it. But this was the song. And it was like someone's like kind of cool apartment in like, felt like Pike Place Market to me. And the sun was kind of moving across. It was like afternoon. And it was like, the idea was you come home and you have a glass of wine after a hard day and you put on KLSY or whatever.
Nice.
And this was a song. And I always thought it was the weirdest song. I was like, what is he? You are the sun, I am the moon, play me. What the heck?
Yeah, it is. Lyrics are really weird. I'm still trying to figure out Song Sung Blue as well. But anyway, we'll just enjoy him at face value for now.
That. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. I'll be back at the old Nest Broadcast Center tomorrow. So we'll see you from there. Until then, have a great Monday. Stay safe, take care of yourselves, and please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Come lately. You are the sun, I am the moon. You are the words, I am the tune. Play me. Song she sang to me, song she brang to me, words that rang in me, rhyme that sprang from me, warm the night. And what was right became me. You are the sun, I am the moon. You are the words, I am the tune. Play me.
I'm a model train enthusiast.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, I've got a whole layout in my basement. It's very much a big passion for me.
Yeah, thank God for model trains.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, if they didn't have the model train, they wouldn't have gotten the idea for the big trains.
Power out.